Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. You know, heeding the call to be selfless, to love beyond measure, and to grow deeply attached to someone else's child truly is the call of foster care and adoption. I think you're going to hear that that story beautifully shared today from some sweet friends of Kevin and I's, Larry and Beth Robertson, coming to us today from Tennessee. Thank you, Larry and Beth, for being with us today.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, guys. I know that you all were ministering together. I know your girls, Becca and Morgan, and you're raising them, and they just have just been such a blessing. But you guys are serving together as a family, and then the Spirit begins to move throughout your home to kind of do more. Because from what I can see, from where about the time I met you guys, you could kind of see empty nest on the horizon.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Exactly.
We were riding our horses toward the horizon.
That's right. That's right. And so just tell us, like I say all the time, no one else knows your story better than you. Tell us how all that came together in your family, because I know you guys were super busy. I know you were you're serving with your kids and just, you know, doing all that God's called you to do and then more. And so tell us how that came about.
Well, for us, the story actually begins before we came into the picture. Although we had, you know, I mean, obviously we've had a burden and a soft spot in our hearts for the vulnerable, but not until local judges in our county reached out to the faith community to just express their concern that 50% of foster care or foster children in the foster care system in our county were being sent out of county. And the judges were trying to broaden the publicity on that need. And so they reached out to local pastors. We hosted a breakfast, and it sparked something at our church to begin an annual day where we promoted foster care and adoption, because obviously God has a special place in his heart for orphans. And although every foster situation is different, in some ways foster care or children in foster care are like virtual orphans. Even if it's for a season of their lives, they have parents, but their parents are unable to provide for them as they need. So technically not orphans, virtually, I think that's not a stretch.
Yeah.
And so we began to promote that as a church. We already had several families in the church that did foster care. We were very, you know, cheerleady for them. And yet after we did that a couple of years, and we actually talked about it, wanting to get into it. And yet I would tell Beth, as a pastor, this terrifies me, because what if we get a teenage girl, we say no, the next thing, you know, no, you can't go out, you know, with your friends tonight or whatever. And then next thing I know, we're dealing with some kind of accusation.
Right.
Regardless of what the law says, in America, you're guilty until proven innocent, it seems. And so we were just afraid to take that step, allowing those fears to paralyze our progress. But after a few years, I would come home every time I would preach on this, and I would lament to Beth, I am such a hypocrite. You know, I'm telling people, this is what God says. This is what God wants. You know, you really should do this. What I wasn't saying was, but I'm not willing to do this. And we, you know, we made it a matter of prayer, and we talked about it, thought about it, did not know what next step to take, honestly. But this is where God just showed up. And he met us where we were, and he provided the avenue. And I'll let Beth step in here, because she's the one who first received information about the four children that we fostered and now we have adopted, and they call us mom and dad.
Oh, I love it. That's so beautiful. Well, Beth, back us up to those first moments. You know, it's so interesting, Larry, the way you said it, that first step, because when people email me or call me and they're like, you know, we really feel led to this, but we're afraid, or we don't know where we fit into, you know, loving vulnerable children, I just tell them that. Take one step toward it. And so, Beth, just tell us how you took that first step and what that looked like for your family.
Right. So, I, you know, and people ask me the same thing. And what I try to tell them is, you know, take the classes, because really, you know, taking the classes really should have probably been our first step, to say yes, but you know, we're busy and it's no, you know, I don't know how it is in your county, but it's no small task,
no,
you know, to get certified, to be a foster parent. But, we had a sibling group of four, and I'm a school teacher, and I had, I was teaching kindergarten, and we had a kindergarten student, not in my class, but in another class, and their family went into custody, and they were not able to find a place for four children. And they were in a temporary placement, and their teacher came to me and said, I know y'all have people in your church, you know, that do foster care. Do you have anybody in your church that could take four children? And I was like, wow, I don't think we have anybody that could take four. All the families. Yeah, four. Because you have to have a bed for everybody.
And
you
mixed
know?
Genders too.
And mixed genders. And so I said, I don't know of anybody that could take four. I said, I mean, maybe Larry and I could take them. And she said, would y'all? And I said, well, let me, I can't even remember if I called him or it might have been a text.
Like, it was just a text, Larry. We're doing this.
Yeah. What do you think about this? And he was like, sure.
I mean, oh, wow.
Always, you know, really been interested.
Well, she kind of came at it around the bush.
Right.
She's like, do we have any families in the church that could take four children? And I said, oh, I don't know. I think all of our families are full up. I just don't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, this awkward pause, and we both just you know, wish we could do it. And Beth's like, you would be open to that? And I said, yeah. What I didn't know that she has told me since was that she was telling the person at school, you know, I wish we could. So we were very much of the same mind.
That's right.
We were.
Yeah.
So, you know, long story, not really so short, but she put me in touch with the kid's caseworker, and I talked to him. He said, get me your driver's license, social security number. We're going to do a quick background check. This was on a Wednesday. And he said, this, it could be, you know, it's probably going to be a short placement. It could be as much as, I mean, it might be 3-6 months maybe. And I said, yeah, we're good. So we got the ball rolling. They came and did the home study the next day.
Oh, my goodness.
That night, that Wednesday night at church was our annual Thanksgiving dinner. And I talked to some people. We got two more beds. People brought beds to the house that night. And Becca was at Union, and she didn't have any classes the next day. She came home just cleared out our bonus room.
Yeah, I can see Becca doing that. Yeah.
Yes, she put everything. She just put everything in the attic, and we got these three beds three twin beds set up in. We have three boys and a girl, so three. We put the boys in the bonus room, and then our daughter Mary took Becca's room since she was in school. So anyway, got all that set up. They came and did the home study the next day, and they brought the kids to us on Friday.
Oh, my goodness.
So it was super quick. And
what a whirlwind.
Yes, we were able to do this through kinship because I already had a relationship with the students through the school system. Our state allows you to do foster care through kinship, which means you can go ahead. They will go ahead and place the children with you, and then you take the classes. They give you like 3 months to get the classes done.
Right. You do it in reverse.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
It was quick, but yeah, so all of a sudden we had, yeah, 4 kids on Friday afternoon after school. And it was, you know, those were fun times. Our first, you know, night, you know, they brought all of their things in, which this just tears me up. And I know you are familiar with this, but in the big plastic garbage bags. Mm. And of course, we did a Walmart run to
of
get
course.
Pajamas, and Becca and Morgan went and got stuff. But all their stuff was just, it wasn't that they didn't have anything, but it was all dumped in one bag. I didn't know what was clean, what was dirty. Uh-huh. So we just started the washing machines and went and got some things just to get us through. And our church family loved on mm-hmm. us. Like, I mean, the next Saturday morning, we had 4 bicycles dropped off, clothes of every kind you can imagine. And it just continued
yes.
for months.
Wow. So you didn't lack for a thing?
No. No, not wow. a thing. I mean, it was amazing.
So that first weekend, you're kind of all on a honeymoon together.
Right.
I'm sure the kids are wide-eyed. They probably, you know, I would venture to say, had they lived with white people before, or was this all new to them? Or?
Oh, this was all new to them.
Yeah, yeah.
This was all new to them. And, of course, we live in a subdivision, so... you know, our yard immediately filled up with kids, and, you know, they just, I mean, just fit right in. We had boys outside, and we already had a basketball goal, but, I mean, they had games going and, you know, the bikes riding and all that kind
of
stuff.
But, you know, they were very, quiet.
Very quiet.
And one of our sons, which is the middle son of the 4, Jamel, did all the talking. And they just whispered among each other. And that lasted for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the spokesperson. Well, Jamel was the spokesperson.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the all-around protector, even though he has an older brother, the oldest one, he still to this day is just quiet as a mouse.
Yeah.
But
he's just a man of few words.
Yeah.
He is. But Jamel was the spokesman, and they all whispered to him, and then he would say whatever it was that they wanted. And it might be, you know, Jimmy wants to know if he can, you know, eat an apple or whatever, you know. And so we still, to some extent, deal with that. But that's the role he had always played.
Mm-hmm.
And it just continued as they came. And that was a little challenging to get used to, that they didn't want to talk to us. And I'm sure they had heard the same thing, that this is temporary. And so why do you want to get really close to someone if it's not going to last? And so there were those hesitancies that were very prevalent those first few weeks.
You know, that's such a great point. And from what I'm hearing, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't try to sabotage that. Those kids, they kind of lost their voice, you know, and felt more
right.
comfortable allowing Jamel to speak. He had the confidence to do that, or felt like he was the protector, I think, Larry, like you said. And so, Beth, you didn't come in and start laying down rules that first weekend. Like, now, if you want to talk to me, you talk to me. Jamel's not speaking for you. I think that's so wise that you
right.
gave that time. And how long did it take for the other kids to kind of find their voice?
Oh, wow.
I think it was after Christmas.
Yeah.
This was, we got them on Friday before Thanksgiving
yeah.
in 2017. And it was probably January before they really began to loosen up. Our daughter, Mary, I did not see her really smile and laugh until into the new year.
Hello.
That was the first time I had seen her happy.
Is she the oldest?
She's the third.
Oh, okay.
It's James, Jamel, and then Mary.
Oh, okay. She's number 3.
Jenny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She's number 3.
Yeah. Wow. And so is she, so you just begin to, as she began to maybe attach to you guys and really begin to trust you, you feel like that's when she began to kind of open up?
Well, it was actually a snowball fight, to be quite frank. She was having the time of her life, and she just let herself go, and she just giggled and laughed. And one thing about Mary, you know, you mentioned earlier about us being white, you know, our children are African American. Mary has albinism, and so her skin is extremely light. She has blonde hair, and so her experience in the African American community, I'm sure, was different. And so, to some extent, you know, perhaps she loosened up, you know, with us because we did not make that an issue. And I tried from early on to affirm the children in every respect. You know, if they had some kind of area that I thought was lacking, you know, I tried to affirm them in that area. And I told Mary from early on that she was beautiful, that God made her beautiful. And, but I'll tell you, it was a few months in and I asked her, I was trying to get her to eat something. And I said, "Do you trust me?" And she just flat out said no.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it hurt my feelings, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But, you know, I quickly thought through that and thought, well, what reason does she have to trust me? She barely knows me. And it was maybe 6 months later, I said, I'm probably trying to get her to eat something, "Do you trust me?" And she said, "I don't know." And I, all I could think was, "Hey, progress."
Progress.
And it was maybe 6 months later or so, probably once again trying to get her to eat something. She's very picky. And I said, "Do you trust me?" And she hesitated. She said, "Yes." And I'm telling you, I wanted to just get up and dance.
That's right.
Because that was so huge. Because I had personally experienced the progress. "No, I don't trust you. I'm not sure if I trust you." "Yes, I trust you." And that was beautiful to see that progress happen. And we've seen that happen with all the children. We like to say that they have blossomed so much. Mary was a tree. She was a statue. I mean, she was just very quiet, very emotionless. And today she is the life of the party. She is loud. She laughs. She's a hoot.
Larry, that's incredible. And you think, I mean, would you guys say that took about a year to get her to that point?
At least, if not longer.
Yeah.
But she was always just the little student at school that walked around with her head hung down. You know, she never looked up. And just to see her, you know, through the process, which is, you know, was a difficult process because, of course, we didn't see down the road what was going to happen. But even with the visits with their mom and all that we went through, they weren't really emotionally attached to their mother either. So just to see her now has just been, I mean, it's amazing.
So when was the adoption finalized? It wasn't too long ago, right?
Right. June the 2nd, just this past 2021. So
a placement that was supposed to be for maybe a couple of months.
Right.
Is now forever.
Exactly. Exactly. And we know we, in foster care, I know it's, you know, my mama heart just struggled because I wanted their mom, you know, to fight for them and for things to be, you know, the goal in foster care, you know, is always reunification. And we thought that was going to happen, you know. I was determined from the first visit, you know, I'm like, I'm going to have a relationship with this woman, you know.
Yeah.
We are going to have a relationship, you know. And I just, from the first time, I mean, you know, super awkward, you know, your first visit, you know, she doesn't know you, you don't know her, and, you know, you're meeting in this random place, and dropping the kids off and then coming back and getting them in 2 hours. You know, that was a little awkward at the first, but I just, you know, I reached my hand out and was going to offer a handshake, and I gave her a hug, and I told her who I was, and, you know, I said, I don't know if you know me. I said, but I'm, you know, a teacher at the kids' school. And, you know, she's kind of just looking at me. And anyway, and I just tried to brag. I said, you have done such a good job with your kids. You have some really great kids.
Beth, that's great. You know,
tried to affirm her. And she still texts me and calls me. I send her pictures of the kids. The kids haven't seen her for about 2 years now, but I've tried to still keep the door, you know, cracked.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's all the way open. She just, she has some things that she's not willing to give up. And so I don't know that, you know, the kids have seen some of their other family members. We've recently, an aunt has reached out to us, and they've met her, and you know, just trying to let the kids know that the rest of their family, that she didn't want the aunt didn't want the other kids to think that all of their family had abandoned them.
Oh yeah.
And I understand that.
Yeah, that's really great. Yeah, that she reached out. That is great. And so I just love the way that you all are welcoming to that, because Beth, I know your personality. It would be impossible for her to turn her back on you when she first met you. You just are very warm and welcoming. And I can just see how the Lord just kind of crafted you for this. And you won't admit that about yourself, I'm sure, but I can, on the outside looking in, and just, you know, affirming that, Mom, I know your heart. I mean, talking with you all through this process, I know your mm-hmm. heart was for reunification. How did the children, did they want to be adopted into another family? Did they welcome this? I know, you know, 10 years down the road, they're going to process this differently. We all know how this works. But for now, for this moment, how did they handle the adoption process?
Well, let me say that probably 3 months, 4 months into the process, they actually went home for a trial return, if you will.
Yeah.
And that lasted for 4, maybe 5 weeks. And it did not go well, and it did not end well. And while they were away from us, we were getting calls every other day. You know, we have a child, can we place them with you? And we were just brokenhearted. Mm-hmm. And because we just fell in love with them. And but yet at the same time, we just didn't feel like we were ready to take another foster situation on. And so we didn't. Well, I'm glad now that we didn't, because we maxed out at 4 children. And when things went south 4 or 5 weeks later, our home was still open.
Mm-hmm.
And so they returned to us at about 10 o'clock I think it was like a Monday night or so. Mm-hmm. And they just ran into our arms, and they were so happy to be back. I think that to some extent was an experience for them that will pay dividends in the long run, because they did, you know, there was an attempt to go back,
mm-hmm.
and it did not go well. And when they returned to us there at that point, we didn't tell them this, but at that point we were actually operating on a dual track with 2 different goals. One was reunification, but we were also beginning, and I say we, I'm talking DCS and all of us, but also there was a track of adoption that was on the table. And so at that point, they began to ask us, would you be open to this? And it was, you know, once again, Beth's mama heart. I mean, she's like, no, I mean, they need to go back to their mama. And And she really wanted that to happen. But the more we dealt with this, the more it became apparent that was not going to happen. And so we wrestled through it and eventually came to the place where we were able to say that if adoption happens, we want to be at the front of the line.
Hey guys, we're going to end right here. Take a pause in our conversation with Pastor Larry and Beth Robertson. You are not going to want to miss the ending of our time with them as they talk about the great hope the Lord has brought to their family. I really appreciate you joining me today on the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, which is a ministry of Sin Relief. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with a friend, and you can find more information and subscribe at sinrelief.org. Thanks for listening and making us a part of your adoption and foster care journey.